I'm Jeremy Brew.
And I'm Gary Butterfield.
And this is Days of Future Cast, the podcast where Gary and I talk about all things X-Men. And we're back with more X-Men 97. Very excited to continue talking about this show with you, Gary, because it fucking rules.
It rules. And also, shit's going to get super real next episode.
Yeah.
Like, that's going to be great. And this is a fun episode. This is a weird two-parter or like split episode.
Yeah.
First part, two part.
I didn't really, when they started announcing like episode titles, we saw this one and it's Motendo / Life Death Part 1. And I was like, what in the fuck? Like, and obviously like Life Death is a famous Clarice Claremont storyline. So we kind of knew what was probably going to be happening with that. But like Motendo, what is that? Yeah. And why is it in the same episode? But yeah, there's basically the first half is a story about Jubilee. And then the second half is a story about Storm, which is a weird thing to do, but also like I'm kind of here for it. So
here's the thing with this episode, like we talked about this before, like you sent me a text and you're like, oh, you know, this stuff is working for me better this mm-hmm. time around, the life death stuff. It's not a split episode. It's a Motendo episode with a 5-minute life death prologue.
Sure. Yeah.
The life death section is literally 5 minutes long.
Okay. Yeah. So maybe you're absolutely right. I'm looking through my notes and realizing like, oh, we're not like, it's like not even a full page of notes. So you're right. Like it can't have been that long when I watched it.
I think that's why. So to me, like this did work better for me knowing what it was, but I don't blame myself for feeling like it was super weird when I first watched it, because the life death stuff, the thing I always felt about it is it happens really quick, you know, and it turns out it does. It happens in 5 minutes. You know, it is a lot of stuff that is packed in a short period of time. It's all pretty good in that, but it does feel like everything's happening fast.
Yes.
To me, it's a weird choice to pin this on the episode at the end of this episode, do an unrelated episode, and then conclude this.
Yeah, I think so.
Like, that is a weird sequencing thing.
It is a very, very strange, and it kind of makes me wonder, like, were we already having some production problems? Like in the yeah. It feels like this was such a weird thing to have been planned. And there's so many yes. people involved in the creation of these shows, and like from the creative standpoint all the way up to like the executive standpoint, that you just wonder like how this happened at any point in time. And you can go ask Beau DeMaio; he's still selling his information out on OnlyFans, so yeah, you can go ask him anytime you want to.
If you want to. a combination of, you know, posting Hole and X-Men 97 Insider.
Yeah,
gossip.
Yeah. Gotta love that combo. He was trash in What If season 3, which probably deserves to be trashed a little bit. It's not, I don't think it's as good as the first couple of seasons, but also like, why are you still talking about Disney, dog? Like, just move on.
Like, it would be good to move on.
Yeah.
It's like you get the sense in this episode a little bit, like the Motendo episode, they didn't quite have enough there.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. You know, and one of the benefits of being on, you know, not on network TV, I wish they had just made that its own episode and then just did Life Death, you know, as an episode and had to be a little longer.
You know, I was surprised. You know? We started watching, I know you're Star Wars aversion, but there's a new Star Wars show called Skeleton Crew, which is like Goonies Star Wars, right? It's about some little kids who find a spaceship and are apparently going on an adventure. First episode is an hour. Second episode is 22 minutes long.
Okay.
And I'm like, and I, you know, I don't care. Like, obviously, like, I was just surprised. But, like, that's the kind of thing you can do if you don't have to sell advertisements during it, right?
Yeah.
Like, you could just have Motendo be a 27-minute episode and then do the life-death stuff as a 35-minute episode. Like, I don't know. Why are we still stuck in, like, ancient times where a show has to be 42 minutes long or 27 minutes long?
I think that fit and that choice is what's responsible for all the weirdness I feel about life-death stuff as it's handled by the animated series. You know, it gave me a little bit more time to breathe, and being paired with its conclusion would have worked really well. I think they wanted to have that cliffhanger.
Yeah, I'll say that. Yeah, yeah.
You know, but then it's weird because we go just to another location and stuff. It does feel very weird structurally to me. Like,
maybe
X-Men 97 is a great show, but it's not flawless. There are a couple things that feel a little strange.
The cliffhanger point is really good, Gary, because like the first three episodes all end with cliffhangers. Maybe that was the thing that they were really trying to accomplish. And like, there's no way you could cliffhanger the end of this Jubilee thing because it's such a self-contained story. Like, it's not like, and then Mojo grabs Jubilee and we're going to deal with it for the rest of the season. And like that's like, they don't want to do that. So that maybe that makes a lot more sense if they just were like, no, we can start up the storyline and then end it at a very quick pace. And then get people wanting more. So
yeah. I wish they just had more time with it.
Me too.
You know, even if that were the case, even if they were still going to split it like this, make this episode 35 minutes and do the first half of Life Death a little bit slower.
Well, let's get into it. We're covering X-Men 97 season 1 episode 4. On her birthday, a nostalgic Jubilee is forced to relive the X-Men's greatest adventures when an entertainment system transports her into a 16-bit video game. This aired on April 3rd, 2024, was directed by Chase Conley, written by Beau DeMaio, Charlie Feldman, and Mariah Wilson. And then we have a little previously section, which is basically like talking about how the X-Men rescued Robert Acosta, and then Storm lost her powers at the trial of Magneto.
I love these previously when you don't know, because the previously always tell you what, you know, you're going to deal with.
Yes.
Like I started not watching them in Game of Thrones.
Yeah. Cause you didn't want to see what was coming up. Yeah.
It would spoil stuff. And this makes it seem like these two storylines are going to meet a little bit. Could not be further
from the truth. As is kind of the habit of the show, they insert slices of stuff we haven't seen in the show into the intro. And this one that I caught was like Jubilee fighting Mojo at one point, which is funny because that's what happens in this episode, but like this scene doesn't happen.
I think she's protecting Dazzler. I think Dazzler's on the ground.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a very brief shot of Forge with like the team of X-Men, and then there's some Xavier and Emma Frost stuff. And again, it's just like cool X-Men panels, basically. Like it doesn't mean anything. Yeah. But I just like the fact that they kind of mix it up a little bit.
It's super cool.
Yeah.
If we remember the last episode, Gambit was being suspicious of Magneto and Rogue's relationship. Yes. We opened with that. Everyone's having breakfast with their X-Men branded cups. And Gambit made some coffee for Rogue, but Magneto beat him to the punch.
How much Duck Feed branded stuff do you think you have in your house? Like, do you have enough coffee cups for everybody to have a Duck Feed coffee party?
I don't own one Duck Feed coffee cup. I have a Duck Fest poster. Okay. That's the only Duck Feed branded.
I wish I'd grabbed one of those. I have a picture of me with one in Portland, but I wish I'd grabbed a real copy. I didn't even think about it.
I'll look and see if I have any.
Okay.
I don't know if I do, but if I have one, I'll get you one. And I have a couple like tchotchkes people made and stuff, like a couple cross knit, you know, logos and stuff.
I have a lot of weird podcast gear of like my own face on some stuff.
T-shirts and mugs.
Yeah, it's very strange. Yeah. So
a Jeremy mug.
It's interesting. They're all drinking coffee, and Gambit has like gotten a cup of coffee for Rogue, but not only has Magneto already gotten it, he's also gotten her order correct.
Yeah. Gambit's like, how about some extra cream? and just that, you know. Magneto, no, she takes three sugars, Gambit. Absolutely brutal.
Absolutely. And then Gambit is like, well, how about, you know, you give me an espresso? And he's like, no. It's very funny.
I'm in charge and everyone's going to go to the danger room and train today.
Yes.
You know, but it's Jubilee's birthday, you know, and people are like, well, you know, surely we can do something for Jubilee. It's her 18th birthday, you know, and Magneto's like, no, she'll have more birthdays if she doesn't die from Sentinels. And Ooh. Everybody groans at his shit.
Box the sunshine that Magneto is.
Yeah. Morphed a, you know, catty joke and says, looks like somebody's parents didn't give him a pony. And Manny goes, my parents died when I was very young. Great.
Very funny. And then Jubilee arrives and is very excited that it's her birthday. She wants to go back to the arcade to do it old school, which of course is a reference to the first X-Men animation series. And as she says this, every single head in the room turns to Magneto. And then we cut to her, like, in her bedroom with Roberto, like, doing an imitation of Magneto telling her no. Yeah. Just being really aggravated. The Master
Magneto caught dead in an arcade.
Yeah. Very funny. Yeah.
Yeah. She, you know, venting to Roberto. And Roberto says, oh, you actually do play video games. This is weird to me, Roberto's attitude towards video games.
Right.
During this. The idea is like, I wouldn't be caught dead playing video games. That's dorky. At first I was like, oh, that is so out of touch with how things are now because video games are everywhere. And I was like, oh no. Yeah. But it's X-Men 97. Like a preppy kid might look down on video games.
Yeah, you know, I didn't actually think about the 97 part of this because, like, X-Men technology is so weird that it just feels like it's modern day anyway.
Yeah.
It's not like we're seeing a bunch of Sony Trinitrons in the Danger Room or anything.
No. Right.
Like, so I guess
you're CRT Danger Room.
Right.
Like,
just look like a weirdo art installation in New York, but also it sends Sentinels after you. I guess this does make sense. I was going to call this out too because I thought it was really weird that like Roberto as presumably an 18-year-old kid would have this kind of feeling about video games. But in 97, like there were definitely people who did not want to play video games and look down on that shit.
Like so, preppies.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, you know, people were mean to me in high school.
She sees a new console there, though. She's never even heard of this Motendo. Yeah. Right next to it is a little doll of Longshot, which I really, really like.
I would like to have that doll. And she, you know, she thinks it's weird that there's a game here, but Rogue had mentioned that there's surprises.
Yes.
So she thinks it's a gift. This is a Sega Genesis, and it has a copy. This episode's full of Easter eggs.
Yes, absolutely.
It has the art on this looks like the Sega Genesis X-Men game. Which is, if you're, do you know about that? Have you ever played that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's weird. Like it's the first strange. One, both of them have really brave choices. Like the first one, you have to get to the end, you have to reset your Genesis.
Oh, I did not know that.
You know, it has this like weird Kojima shit. And then the second one, when you turn on the console, you start in a stage with a random X-Men and you don't get the title screen until you beat the first stage.
Oh, that's so weird.
It's super weird. Like they're creative, weird games that no one ever talks about. Like they're not great or anything. You know, they're 16-bit platformers where your character is way too big, but the, they're neat.
I just, I think I may have played the second one recently because I did that thing that I always do, which is like set up ROMs on my little Shield TV box for my TV. And mm-hmm. downloaded every single ROM in existence and was like, put it all in RetroArch and was like, now I have 1,000 Genesis games and I don't want to play any of them, but I can play any of them at any time.
Look at my phone.
Yeah. But the, you know, of course I scrolled down to the X-Men section to see if there was anything in there. And there was one of them and you had to choose like between Gambit or Nightcrawler and the characters were entirely too huge. It reminded me of the NES Turtles game, the fucking horrible.
Yeah.
The one that your character just blinked constantly.
And that way, and you also fight lots of like men who are on fire yes. and like crawling eyeballs and stuff. All the classic Dude, turtles enemies.
So fucking weird, man. She turns the game on, so she flips the game on because they're going to play some video games, and immediately they get sucked into the video game by weird tech tentacles. And they wake up being attacked by sentinels, but they're not in the mansion anymore. They're like as the side of the mansion's torn off. They realize they're in like downtown New York. They're in the city.
Yep.
And Jubilee, because Roberto has this thing where he refuses to use his powers in case anybody finds out he has powers, Jubilee has to constantly save Roberto throughout this segment section.
Yep. She mentions it. He just doesn't want to do it. Some Friends of Humanity guys come after they fight the Sentinels. They run away and there's a phone ringing and they answer it. And this is, you know, what if it's a trap? And this teleports them to old school Genosha.
Yeah.
Jubilee calls it out like, oh, we used to be here. Like I was trapped here with Storm and Gambit.
This phone thing is like big Matrix energy to me.
Big time.
And I kind of love it. Like even though the years, cause I think Matrix was 98 if I'm remembering right. And I don't necessarily care. I just
99.
Was it really? Was it 99?
Yeah.
Okay. Jeez.
Not trying to be a pedant or anything. Just no, it's, yeah, it's a little bit later than that even.
Yeah. That's crazy. That's probably the second, has second place for the most times I saw a movie in a theater was Matrix. I went back to that movie probably 9 times. So
this is also again Easter eggs. We're in the Easter egg period here, so we get to see Blob and Sunfire in the background,
yes.
which I like. And some soldiers come out with laser guns and start shooting them, but they get killed.
Yeah.
By this mysterious figure, Jubilee calls a cyberpunk mirage. This woman wearing like spiky cyber clothes.
Yeah, for a new character, quote unquote new character, it's very well designed. Like it's very like punky aesthetic, and I kind of dig it.
This character is from the comics.
Oh, really?
This okay. version of yes, I didn't end up doing my research. I remember reading about this when I first watched the episode, and then today I was a little crunched for time, so I feel bad about this. But this is based on a Jubilee story. With a version of her from the future.
Interesting. I'll have to go seek that out because I really liked like the whole vibe of this chick. We're gonna find out later. Like this is just Jubilee when she's older, right? Like that's all this is.
And they kind of do a clever way of incorporating it because it's like a digital version of Jubilee. And I realized when I was watching this, and I was like, I kind of want to see how that story too because I've never read a good Jubilee story.
Not like that featured her, right?
Yeah, like the one where she finds out about Ilyana dying. Like that's a classic of the 90s, you know, that's a good mm-hmm. story. But in terms of like an arc, and then I was watching this and I was like, it's kind of cool if the cartoon's giving her a thing,
a like thing
she gets a highlight
do.
Episode,
yeah,
you know, but it's all based on nostalgia and the idea that like she's yearning for past X-Men times, which I don't think was set up very well in the series before this.
Not really, you know? At all. I don't think this was set up at all, really, to be honest with you. Like the big thing at the end where, and we'll talk about it, but when they're like, you know, you need to look ahead or whatever, I'm like, okay, like it's her birthday. Can you just give her a slice of cake instead? Tell her she did a good job.
Cut her some slack. You know, like Roberto just being like, I fucked up. And it's like, that's not why Roberto died. Roberto died because an evil Magneto boss popped out of nowhere and slammed her against the wall.
Lots of people would die to the weird Magneto bubble. Like, I mean, it's not your fault, I promise you.
The messaging in this episode is real weird, like what it's trying to do for characters. I appreciate it's giving Jubilee a highlight episode, and the Easter eggs and stuff in it are very fun.
Yeah, and everything, like all the animation stuff is A+.
My God, it looks so cool. And the music.
Oh my God, dude.
You know, shout out to my friend Jeremy Greer, who got me the soundtrack for this.
I did.
On vinyl. Watching this episode again made me really excited to listen to that more, because it's going to have all these cool songs.
You know, we've recorded, I think this is our fourth episode we've recorded, and because our schedules have been so weird, I actually have not been able to edit the first couple episodes, and I'm glad we had to wait, because now I can get it, the soundtrack digitally, and I can put all the music into the podcast, so that's going to be a lot of fun, because I'm going to use every track I possibly can to get it in there.
The soundtrack's really good. The Newton Brothers.
Yeah, whoever those guys are. Yeah.
Yeah. So she runs up, Jubilee runs up to the Mirage and runs into a, like a force field. Like it's like the edge of the system, you know, and here's where she realizes, she puts together like, oh, we're in a video game. And then Mojo pops up.
Yeah. But super skinny Mojo, which is somehow super worse than normal Mojo.
Also a weird Easter egg of the comics, the other species of Mojos, there are skinny Mojos.
I hate it.
And they're really unnerving looking.
Yeah, I really, really hate it. Here. This is classic Mojo, though. I don't know. I have such an affection for Mojo's voice actor in the original series. Like, it was so
different.
Off the wall. And the delivery here is great. Like, I don't really have any complaints besides that it's different, right? Like, it's just not, it's like listening to a cover first. Like, you just don't want to go back to the original. Like, and it's kind of one of those things, where I heard the original first, so it's always going to be my thing. But whoever's doing this is doing a great job, because he's all over the place and he's yelling about his ratings and how he's pivoting to video games, and that now Jubilee is player one, star number one, because he couldn't get Dazzler. Dazzler had
a gig,
which is just very funny.
He's thin now, as we mentioned, and he says that at first he's like, oh, you know, I got some surgery. And he's like, no, I'm going to be honest with you, it's the ratings. Like, he eats ratings.
Yes.
You know, that's what he does. He converts that into energy. That's Mojo's deal. So he's starving, basically.
And we go,
you know, that is why he's thin Mojo.
While he's doing his monologue, like, we go to his like live audience like studio that we always see Mojo Vision in. So it's got the same like stadiums full of weird aliens watching all of this live, the kind of stuff that the original series did. And Mojo, as he's talking, is like, hey, I don't want to say anything as basic as, if you die in the video game, you die in real life, but you do. And he just yells out, stakes.
Really
just
good.
So good.
You know, and he basically kind of gasses up Jubilee.
Yes.
You know, like, listen, you know, you are the new school. The X-Men are over it, and shows a bunch of X-Men TV shows. These are very funny.
I want to see all of these. But very specifically the divorce court with Jean and Cyclops. That's really funny.
How would it be a show? Like, does every week they just get divorced?
I don't know. I don't know, but I want to be there. Like, just like every time that they have to have a moderated meeting to discuss custody, or, you know, who's getting the X-Men poster or whatever. Like, I can't believe you're taking this from me, Jean. This was mine. I brought this to the marriage. Like,
surprise witness, Emma Frost. Yeah.
Yeah. I've also never gone through a divorce. So maybe that would be just fun for me as a person who's never experienced that. Maybe it'd be a lot less fun for people who have gone through that. And so,
and as I've only gone through a no-fault divorce, it was just done through paperwork. So, like, I'd love to see the action-packed version of it.
When my dad's most recent wife left him, they're still doing, like, they've been divorced for well over 2 years now, but they're still doing like the, all of the breakdown and like who owns what or whatever, like that's still ongoing. But when she left, she took like fucking light bulbs out of the fucking sockets, bro.
Oh my God. like
she cleaned that dude out. And that's like not what you're supposed to do. Like, you're not supposed to take anything from the domicile. Like, but I mean, she cleaned that motherfucker out. And I was like, what are you going to do with these light bulbs, man? What are you spite lighting into your new place?
Spite bulbs. Yeah. You know, Mojo talks about doing this, says that the X-Men are old school, and sends her into level one here. And this is fucking sick.
I love this dude so much.
Hooting and hollering. Dude. Like watching this the first time, like,
and this time, like, I'm not even taking notes at this point. Like, I had to rewind to take some notes on what happened because we get so much good stuff. Like, it looks a lot like the X-Men arcade machine game that I think everybody knows and loves. They probably that everyone in our age group, right, that had one of those available to them.
Konami 1995 X-Men game.
Yeah, it features a little chiptune, like an 8-bit version of the X-Men theme, which is so fucking good. And then they're just like fighting their way through stuff. Like, they go to the Savage Land. They're getting beaten up by on, like, it's so good.
It's really good. The powers are, it's referencing that, you know, that arcade game with the character select screen and stuff. It also has a little side wing portrait to look a bit like Marvel versus Capcom.
I thought so too. Excellent.
There's a lot of little Easter eggs to that, and that's true for the whole series. Like, later characters will do moves that are from Marvel versus Capcom,
which is great.
Like Cyclops specifically.
Absolutely really great. Yeah.
Like, Capcom made the X-Men fighting look fucking awesome.
I know.
You know, in motion, better than it's ever been done in motion on a TV show or movie.
Didn't they redo that or something? Did they do a Marvel versus Capcom remake or something? Yeah, I thought I heard that. I might need to dip into that. I don't know if they're not owning
it.
It got those games.
Nominated for Best Fighting Game at the Game Awards and made a bunch of people upset because it's a re-release. So that's how I know there was a remake.
Honestly, like, if they could just start doing, because I know that people also got upset because the Shadow of the Archery was like Game of the Year or was nominated for Game of the Year, even though it was DLC. Like, that would make me watch the Video Game Awards way more if they just did some fucking just awful stuff like that. Like, if they turned it into what is that On Cinema thing that it's impossible for me to get into now because there's 1,000 hours of it or whatever. Like, if they if they turned into some weird shit like that, like, that would be the best thing ever. But of course, George Keeley's never going to allow it to be strange. So.
It'd be very funny though. They do that. But this is incredible. Yes. Super, super fun.
Jubilee almost dies. Like, her health bar gets real low, and I thought it was Mojo that brought her back, but I think the actual implication here is that it's old Jubilee bringing her back. Like, there's a bug in the system
or something like that.
Yeah, and we see like Mojo yelling at Spiral, who is like using all of her hands to try to maintain the video game system, which is just very funny to me. Like, she is not trained. I think she even makes a joke about like, this is what you get when you fire the tech people or something. Like, she's not into this at all.
It sounds like it's also kind of a fun little shot at Elon Musk there. Like, this is what happens when you fire all of tech support.
Oh yeah, maybe
like
so.
Around when this was written, that's probably it was right when he did that. They're going to go to the final stage. It's Asteroid M here, and I've talked about this before. I'm not sold on Roberto's voice actor in this. There's a monologue here where he talks about seeing this on TV and pretending he hated mutants to his family, where the words are good, but his delivery is so weird and quick. Like, he never pauses during this. He's just like, I remember seeing this on the news. I had to pretend to hate mutants. Like, it's very flat. Like, I don't know. I don't like this actor.
I did think that this was like a weird moment to like, oh, I saw this on the news and I had to pretend that I hated mutants in front of my family. And meanwhile, like, they're walking into a Magneto boss fight. pay attention to what's going on.
The situation hasn't landed on you yet, Roberto. You're stuck in a video game where you're going to die in a minute.
Yeah. Like, he is so non-concerned about like the giant weird fucking alien Mojo.
He's never sounded concerned about anything. Like, the voice actor is incapable of sounding like he's concerned.
I wonder if he's a known guy.
He does better during the highlight episode with him and his parents later. But part of it, like, the two things I don't like about him is, like, one, I don't think it's a very good performance, but two, I don't think he has any chemistry with Jubilee, and we're supposed to, this is the episode that's kind of starting that, where they're as a kind of love interest, you know. She falls on him, there's a little bit of like you know, at the end they have a moment. I just don't believe in their charisma.
Do they casted the most handsome man you've ever seen in your life to be this guy. His name is Guy, G-U-I, number one. So you know this motherfucker's got game just from that. Yeah. But he is. He's been in a lot of stuff. He is an extremely Guy handsome Agostina. Man. Yeah, Guy Agostina.
Oh, shit. Yeah, this guy's got to go shoot a CEO. He's CEO handsome.
I love that he's credited for Grand Theft Auto 5. He's credited as the local population. Honestly, given Grand Theft Auto, that could be a character or just a bunch of characters, and I don't know which one it would be. Is there a guy named the local population in Grand Theft Auto 5? I have no idea.
He probably does all the people with Brazilian.
Sure, but just like the idea voices. Of Grand Theft Auto 5 having a guy.
The local population. It's a good name for like a guy.
Yeah. That's very funny to me.
So he encourages Jubilee to grow up. You know, she's like, this is kind of fun. I'm enjoying that I'm back here.
Yeah.
You know, this is cool. He says, you know, grow up, and he gets smashed by an energy ball and killed immediately.
And it's time for a boss battle. This is Magneto. Yeah. And I, you know, I have to say that it's remarkable. A lot of shows get video game stuff wrong, right? Like, I think there's a lot of like stuff where writers like know just enough about a thing that they write it and it just never comes out quite right, right? Like, we've seen it with people using like controllers for the wrong video game system and things like that. This little section where Jubilee is facing down Magneto and she's like, he has a pattern, you know, he's going to do this and this, and then I'll be able to sneak up behind and do this. Like, I was like, that's fucking Dark Souls, man. Yeah. Like, she just video gamed this shit. This is good. Like, this is actually a good representation of what a video game is.
Like, specifically like 8-bit and 16-bit video games, like a Magneto hovering in the sky shooting out balls and letting down his shield.
Yes,
like that would be a boss fight in, you know, in the X-Men game. Like, that was a brawler, so there weren't as much pattern recognition, but like that could be a boss fight in like Shinobi
or fucking Contra, right?
Like,
very Contra-esque of trying to figure out like the moves that the boss is going to make that leaves them open. I really like this. I thought this was really, really good. As she blasts Magneto basically into bits, she runs over and, you know, Roberto is doing that like fade in, fade out thing from video games, which was also very funny to me. And then she finds an extra life, which is like a green X in the X-Men symbol. And she gives it to Roberto and all of his health comes back. So he's back as player two. I love this, Gary. Like, if you told me, I don't know why I love this so much. I guess it's just because it works, because I'm a video game kind of person, but also it just works very, very well for me.
It's real cute. Like, I like it a lot too.
Yeah.
This extra life isn't supposed to be there. It's not part of the level. Abzani, or whatever her name is, added it in. And Mojo's real mad about this. You know, it's like, oh, that glitch is still here, Spiral. Get rid of it. And Spiral can't. Roberto comes back and he's real mad. This is where he's like, you know, and she's like, I know, I fucked up. And I'm like, all you did was say you were nostalgic for like 2 seconds. I don't think you fucked up.
Like, and you got trapped into a video game. Of course, like if I got pulled into Mario Brothers, Autumn wouldn't be like, stop worrying about Luigi. I'd be like, no, I want to see fucking Luigi. We're in the Mario Brothers game. Well, I'm sorry. Like,
you could be like, oh man, we're in a video game. This is dangerous and stuff. But if you're like, this is kind of neat, that wouldn't be enough for her to be like, you've really fucked up.
Yeah, you really fucked this up, Jeremy. And I'm like,
you said this was kind of cool. I can't believe you said that. It got me killed by Bowser.
Yeah, you need to grow up. And I'm like, it's not my fault you touched the turtle. Like, that was on you. Yeah. I told you to
also,
jump.
I'm 18.
Also, like, I'm 18. Grow up.
Yeah. Like, I'm playing video games. Like, I'm 18. It's my birthday as well. Get off my fucking case, Roberto.
So funny. They get pulled in by she has a name. It's Absinthe. I just called her Old Jubilee in my notes, which is probably not.
It's something like Absinthe. I haven't read the story. I've just read about it. Magneto comes back to life. You know, Mojo cheats, and Absinthe reaches through the roof and grabs him and brings him into a glitch realm.
Love this.
Really cool. This looks great. And this is this little area outside of the video game. And she explains basically what's going on. You know, there's a cute little moment where they both say the same thing to Roberto.
Yes.
And that's when she realizes it's her from the future, not just because she's wearing earrings that also say Jubilee.
Yeah, that does help. Does very much help. It's Abscissa.
Abscissa.
Abscissa. What are you?
Sounds so much like abscess. Like, right? It's such a horrible name.
A horrible fucking name.
Basically this Jubilee is, you know, in order to playtest the game, they made a simulation of Jubilee to run through the levels over and over. This is the only one that still exists.
Yes, absolutely.
And grew old, has run through them forever.
And you know, that's such a bummer. Like, that's so horrible. Like, that sounds like the torture that Mojo would do, right? Like, that it feels like a Mojo thing to make this people do all of levels over and over and over again.
Yep. And basically, you know, gives her some advice saying like, listen, you know, I know this is fun and nostalgic, but, you know, and it's good to go back to old media where there are no surprises, you know, but video games, it's not living, you know, life is a risk. You have to take that risk.
And again, you know? Like,
Jubilee did nothing wrong.
why are we piling on Jubes? Like, is it? Yeah. It's my fucking birthday,
and I want to play a video game. Like, how fucking dare you?
Autumn got me so good the other day because we've been doing this aquarium thing, and we were moving the aquarium like all of the fish from the old aquarium to the new one and moving the old one outside and all this other stuff. And we finished up and it, you know, she had all of her new pumps and tubes and everything all in there. And she's like washing her hands. And I'm like, and I tell her from the living room, she's in the kitchen. And I'm like, this, you know, this looks really nice. Or I said something like, you know, your water needs to, it's going to take some time to clear up or something. It wasn't a compliment. It was just, it was an observation. And she looked at me and she was like, you could just tell me I did a good job. Like, that's all you need to say. And I was like, you know what? You're absolutely right. I am so sorry. You did a great job and I'm going to shut my fucking mouth. So, I do love what, like, when Jubilee hears this, she's like, so Magneto was right, which is just very funny. Cute. And then it's time for another boss fight. Magneto, like,
not Magneto, Mojo.
Mojo crawls out of the screen, which is a whole different version of that Ring movie that I would like to see.
Really spice that up.
Yeah, anytime you put the NES cartridge in, Mojo comes out of your TV.
Shit. This is real cool. A big, you know, digital Mojo for them to fight.
Yeah.
Here is a boss fight.
Why is this so much better than the Psychic Realm? Why do we like this and not the Psychic Realm, Gary?
I don't know. Even though the Psychic Realm in Psychic Plane, X-Men 7 is pretty good.
It is. Like, yeah, it is.
They made it better in this show, too. Mm-hmm. And the cool thing is old Jubilee is using her powers in ways that young Jubilee can't.
Yeah.
This is the thing that happens in with abscessness or whatever in the comic. Because Jubilee, she shoots fireworks, but what they are, little pieces of plasma, like superheated matter, you know? So she can do all this weird, cool shit. She just only knows how to do them as fireworks.
Yes.
You know, so the idea that Jubilee could learn how to use her power and do like skate around, like use, like float on these like little pillars of plasma to kind of skate around or create little blades out of it and shit. So all this cool stuff Jubilee's doing is implied in the comics.
I love that Jubilee too is like, I can do all of this. Like she's looking at it and like getting inspired to like level up her game, which is very cool.
It's sick.
One of my favorite things is when like mutants try to figure out their power. I've talked about this a lot on the podcast, but when like when Iceman comes back from the future as a fucking ice wizard or some shit.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Well, it was cool in the 90s. Like that was a cool storytelling thing too. That's when they started that stuff with Emma Frost, like telling, you know, Bobby Drake, like, hey, you're holding yourself back. Like I've been inside your head. Charles Xavier might be too polite to say this, but I'm not. You could do way better than this shit. And it was a really compelling arc that like I remember from the 90s. What's weird is that they never did that with Jubilee. Instead, they turn her into a vampire mom.
So fucking like, weird.
Trying to find good Jubilee stories has been difficult because they made her character really irritating. They took it in a real weird direction.
And the two together, by the way, I saw this as I was looking up how to pronounce Abscissa or Abscissa. The voice actor for Abscissa is the voice actor who played Jubilee in the original series.
Yeah, the white lady before they recast her as Asian,
which I just thought was a neat little touch.
Great little Easter egg.
Yeah.
You know, and they team up to fight him. This does look great. This is the coolest Jubilee's ever looked.
Yes.
This is the coolest Jubilee's powers have ever looked. Like this is so sick. This is really good.
And like the way that they're fighting Mojo, like cutting off his legs, cutting off his tail, like slowly but surely, like working him down. And then all of a sudden, like Roberto uses his powers and shoots him a little bit to do his stuff. It just looks so fucking good. Like, I think the bar for like superhero animation right now is probably the Spider-Verse movies. And it looks like it's this scene specifically is up there with those Spider-Verse movies of just how fucking cool it looks. For me.
Great looking. Like, it looks incredible. They end up taking him out.
Yes.
Here. Roberto and Jubilee wake up back in the room with the Motendo is on fire and Jubilee kisses him.
Yeah.
And little sparks come out, which is cute. Again, I don't buy their chemistry, but I want Jubilee to have a love interest.
Gary does not ship it.
I can't ship this one.
Got to go to AO3.com/JG Greer. Find out all the Jubilee and Roberto. Jubilee. Yes. You're going to want to read the tags. This is kind of a dead dove situation.
Yeah. Make sure you know what you're getting into.
Yeah. Are you familiar with dead dove tags on AO3, by the way?
Yeah. I'm familiar with dead dove do not eat.
Yeah. It's so weird that it became the thing that it is on AO3. It's just one of the most fascinating internet things for me. So
it's a really weird reference.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, for that to be a thing. And also just to be like, hey, I know this is fucking, nobody wants this. Like, this is really nasty. Yeah. It's the word equivalent of, you know, don't click. Like, I remember if you remember that from like, you know, mid 2010s, like somebody that when somebody would post like a goatsy or something like that, and they just post it as things they don't click.
Yes, you exactly. Know, well, now I have
your
to.
Curiosity.
You told me not to. This is the end of the first section. So Now we're going to go to Life Death Part 1, which is going to be a story about Forge and Storm. In the previous episode, Storm had lost her powers and was at a bar drinking her pain away when Forge finds her. And it's like, hey, I'm a mutant. I'm a friend of Xavier's. I could fix you. And she's like, okay, let's go to Texas.
Let's go live together.
Let's go live together in your ranch.
Yeah, you can wear my clothes.
Yeah.
I've got some overalls that might fit you, Storm.
Yeah, Storm and white overalls is such a weird fucking design look.
It's so funny.
I love it. Like it's literally like just trying to find clothes that vaguely fit her, right? Because it's not like she brought a bag or anything.
Casual Storm is really fun to think about because like in the comics, Storm is either dressed up to the nines or dressed up like a Star Trek ambassador.
Yes.
Like a weird flowing robe thing. Storm wearing just clothes is really strange.
Star Trek ambassador.
Like, you know what I mean, though, right?
No,
like,
I do. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. It was very vivid. Yeah. No, it landed. Absolutely landed.
Nobody dresses like those people, except I've known one ultra rich person in my life. One of my friends growing up, his parents were doctors and they owned a medical, like the eye doctors in town, basically in my small town. So they had like a mansion and stuff. I went over to their house and that's how they dressed as well.
Really?
Like, if you just don't have to leave the house, but you still want to be wearing clothes. Like, they were just wear these weird flowing like robes of various shades of gray.
Man, robes.
Gray and like maroon.
Robes is one of those things that, like, when they ask you, how do you know you grew up poor? Like, or like, what is a thing, like, if you grew up poor that you can't see yourself using? And, like, it's definitely a robe. Like, a robe seems like such a rich person thing to me now. Even though, like, you could probably just buy one from Amazon for like $40. In fact, I think I have a robe that Autumn got me in this house somewhere, and I just don't wear it because it makes me feel like I'm a poser somehow. Like, I'm wearing a fucking robe.
I didn't wear a robe until my an ex-girlfriend, whose parents also had money, bought me a really nice robe, which I wear from time to time now. But up until that point, I was in a similar spot where I was like, it's not making robe money here.
Yeah.
Like, just regular clothes just works fine. I don't need a third clothes for when I want to be almost naked. You know?
Also, like, just like the idea of, like, I'm going to be kind of naked in my living room. But still clothed and like uncomfortable because I'm going to sit on the robe and the robe's going to like pull. Like, the whole idea of a robe in my mind has just become this huge, like, awkward
thing.
It's a
walking clothing.
Yeah.
Like, it's only good for walking. And if you have to sit down or lay down, they become really uncomfortable. Also, if you sit down in them, like, your balls stick
out
famously.
Yeah.
Yeah. They hang out. I remember one of my friends, I won't name them here in case they wouldn't want this associated, but him telling me about his dad sitting down, his balls just hanging out like every morning.
Oh, no.
You know, and yeah, and it's just like, yeah, this robe, like, what function are you?
God, and you know, dads just wouldn't fucking care about their balls being out, too.
No,
like, they would think it's fucking hilarious, man. You just,
yeah, it's like, nothing you haven't seen before.
I can see that, me doing that in a couple of years of just, like, showing Autumn my balls on the couch and then laughing at it. Like, I can definitely, it creeps up on you.
It's that in the age when you start farting in grocery stores and not, like, caring.
Yep.
You know, just like loudly or walk behind an old guy at a grocery store and they're just like letting it rip.
You've given up on your dreams of bottling beer. So now you're at the grocery store ripping farts.
You're not bottling anything. Like, it's all, everything's free flow.
You moved on to a rock collection. God, collecting rocks. That thing in Breaking Bad was so good. I love that.
It's real good. Forge makes Storm his dad's famous bison chili, which is, that's a bad meat for chili.
Yes.
They say it's lean and it's good for spices, but like, por que no los dos. And he basically explains, you know, his powers.
Yes.
You know, she asks about it. He's like, oh, you know, my brain can make connections. Like, I can invent things. I access a part of my brain. Humans don't. So I can make connections. Like, my brain is always a Rubik's Cube on constant autopilot.
It's a weird expression, but okay, I'm down. Yeah. I think it's like probably a good metaphor for the way his brain works, though. Like, having read a bunch of Forge stuff, I can definitely see that.
Yeah.
He pours some wine, and she asks about his arm because he has a techno arm, and he's like, and he just basically says, "I was a soldier."
This is so funny.
And there was a war.
This is where when I talk about this, not this being too quick, this is what I mean. Because he goes, "I was a soldier. There was a war," and she goes, "I miss my powers." Like, immediately after that, there could be a pause there. You know, and it'd be like, oh, he doesn't want to keep talking, so I'm changing the subject. But she says it immediately in response.
Yes, yeah. Like, definitely feels like we cut this. A scene here, right? Like, it definitely feels like there's some dialogue cut out.
But even just a pause, even just kind of like a you know,
and then they
made that make more sense.
Then he's like she talks about missing the wind and like being her ability to soar the sky. And then he's like, okay, enough with the bison chili and the wine. Let's go horseback riding.
Yes.
Like, immediately
and
afterwards.
It just keeps happening. Like, everything is happening very fast. Like, oh, you need to use your imagination. They go horseback riding, you know, and you got to keep up. I'm not going to build you a faster horse. She starts going fast. He's like, now you're improvising. Like, you are now flying because you're doing it, you know, finding this thrill in another way. He also almost pranked her by sending her over a cliff.
Yeah. I guess that's just something that's something that Texans do, like if they got cliffs.
It's absolutely a Forge thing. Like Forge is just like, you know, if you want to be my woman, you got to make sure you're smart enough not to run off a cliff that you didn't know was there.
If you want to be my woman, you got to
get with my cliff.
Got to jump off my cliff.
Got to check out this cliff. You can see the owls going from left to right.
New theme for the podcast, Gary. Let's do it.
Storm gets there. And she's like, it's very beautiful, but she's like, this, you know, the winds here are always blowing east, and I keep seeing this owl. This was really interesting to me because it makes it sound like it was a simulation.
Yes.
Or something. Mm-hmm. Really, it's the adversary. We're going to see him later. He's like an owl guy.
Yeah.
He's controlling this. Forge just misses it. Forge is like, oh, you should know how quickly the weather can change.
Yeah. And then they go back to his lab. And on the wall, we get like a series of little kind of nods to the X-Men. We see like a picture of X-Factor when Forge was in it, of like the classic X-Factor team and uniform, right? We see like a beach photo, which I think is very funny. Like,
I don't know,
like, we don't have a lot of pictures of ourselves up around the house, and it's just mostly because we're lazy, but like, I don't know that I would just like hang, like if I'm a single dude, if I would just hang a picture of me on the beach on the wall, right, on the bulletin board or whatever. Like, it's a weird vibe is what I'm saying.
It's real weird. Okay. Like, here's my friends at the beach, or here's me, and you're right, this is what I saw too, is like maybe one of them looks a little bit like Trask, which is gonna be the reveal here.
Yes.
Like, I love to just put myself up on this picture with like a picture with my boss, the arms contractor who hired me for the government.
Absolutely. We just watched the X-Files episode where he finds like the picture of his dad with all of the like the syndicate or whatever, and it's just a bunch of old white guys, and he's like yelling at his mom, who are these people? And his mom's like, I don't know, don't fucking ask me, man. They're all old white people that your dad worked with. I don't remember their names. I'm divorced, and I didn't tell you about it until like three episodes later. So Jeremy was really confused when he learned that.
So he comes back and he's like, hey, you know, I figured it out. You know, I found the connection. Jump in the tube.
Yeah. Of course, there's always a tube. Gets in the tube,
puts her in the nutrient bath, has her come out, says, tries to use her powers, and she can't. This is a really nice little sequence where she, like, at first she says, you know, winds hear me. And then, you know, Forge says, you know, do it more. And she, like, says it really confidently, and it still doesn't work. And then she begs.
Yes.
Like, she's really broken down.
And she, like, falls to her feet when this doesn't work, and she starts crying. And there's this, like, really beautiful scene, like, where the camera's framed behind the two of them kneeling on the ground, like in front of this huge full moon. And as the owl like flies by, just really, really fucking cool.
Looks really good.
And we go back inside. This time it's her turn to cook. So she made leftover bison chili, which is what Storm's specialty is. You're never going to believe what my specialty of food is.
It's in the fridge.
It's yesterday's meal. That's what I'm good at. How do you like to cook, Jeremy? Yesterday's meal.
Microwave.
That's going to put me on Top Chef. So, she asked him, like, you know, why are you trying to fix me? And he basically starts talking about how he worked for the government and contributed technology that led to the technology that took away her powers. And he's been basically trying to fix her to sue this conscience. And she is incredibly pissed. She's like, I can't believe you do this to me. You've been lying this whole time. And he's like, no, I haven't been lying to you. I actually really do love you. You're a goddess. And I'm like, this is red flag territory for me, my man.
This huge red flag. Like, this is, again, one of the reasons why this part feels weird to me is it's so fucking quick.
So fast.
It's hard to tell how much time has intended to have passed.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, and if this part of the episode had been a little bit longer, they could have had like some montages or something to imply like, oh, this is over the course of months.
Yeah.
You can guess that, you can assume it, but because of the pace of the cartoon, it being very sprightly, it just feels like he just fell in instant love with her. And like, there are people who will hear me say that and be like, oh, it's Storm. Like, of course, you know, you're gonna shoot your shot. Mm-hmm. And like, that's not the kind of story this is, or it's based on. Really, it's not based in a modern like, oh, Storm is just so good, everyone fucking loves her. It's not like when Dracula fell in love with her, you know. Like, life death is about their relationship. Like, they know each other. It's the reason why this comic got adapted is because it's like a sweet romance comic in a lot of ways, and it just feels more believable than this.
If they just had a montage of like bison of a bison herd just being thinned out. You know what I'm saying?
Cuts over to a field of scallions that like, is slowly getting thinned out.
Yeah, like we start with like 100 head of bison. then
keep showing Ford to the store.
Right.
Just keep getting chili wipe after chili wipe.
And then by the end of it, like, Ford's just walking out and there's three bison left. So we know a lot of time has passed.
You got a bunch of it in his deep freeze. You know? I hope you're hungry. I made bison chili for breakfast.
Every single day, he's like, here's some bison wool overalls for you, store.
I made bison biscuits.
Yep.
For breakfast.
It's so good. I've eaten bison. It's not particularly a great gamey meat to me.
It's good. It's very lean.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. He tells her, like, and talking about, like, red flag over the top, like, I could live forever and never conceive something as perfect as you. And I'm like, dial it down with the love bombing, my man. Like, what are we doing? Dude. But he grabs her and tells her that he loves her. And in classic Storm fashion, she just slaps him across the face and leaves. And says, you meant to make me a goddess, but instead you fashioned a fool, which is a really good line. Whoever's writing Storm had really captured the dialogue, the speech patterns. She races outside, jumps on a horse, goes riding through the storm. And then when she sees these giant owl eyes in the sky, and then all of a sudden she's like taken, and then she like plunges through Forge's roof.
She falls, like, she falls into a pit and then falls into Forge's roof. It's real cool.
Really interesting. You know, yeah.
Yeah. And then the roof repairs itself. It goes in reverse.
So we know something is weird here.
This real imagery, the show does with the shit like this has been really good.
So good. And Forge is there, like, are you okay, baby? And she's like, don't call me baby. I don't, we're not.
This isn't working.
Darling, is that okay?
No. I'm just staying at your house. We don't know each other.
We just met. Once, man. Yeah. Why do you call me Honey Bunny? Like, I watched Pulp Fiction on the cable one day and you start calling me Honey Bunny. I don't like it.
Stop doing it, Forge. Forge is implied to get killed. It gets bit by the owl. Yeah. And little veins cup out, you know, it's poison or whatever. And then Storm says, like, oh, is this death? And the owl demon says, you know, you live suffering and despairing, you know, it feeds on suffering, despair, similar to like Mojo feeding on ratings.
Yes.
The adversary won't waste my meal.
And the adversary, we should note, like, once the adversary, like, this owl thing grabs her and takes her, like, outside, like, this giant fucking demon-esque owl looks really fucking cool. Like, the art on this is
amazing. The adversary looks great.
Yeah. Really like this.
Adversary, classic X-Men Forge villain. It's like Forge's arch enemy, basically. Big part of the Fall of the Mutants crossover is them fighting the adversary in Texas.
Nice.
One of the first trade paperbacks I ever got of the X-Men. So a weird thing to start with, because it's just like three stories that are barely contained.
I was about to say, like, that had to be rough.
It made no sense. I only knew the X-Men basically from the cartoons and modern comics.
Yes.
And then picked up that trade used at a bookstore. And I was like, oh, here's three random X-Men stories that have nothing to do with each other.
Yeah.
And at the end of one of them, they go into the Siege Perilous and wake up in Texas or in Australia.
Yeah, I've talked about it a bunch, but like having a lot of my X-Men exposure be the animated series and like the wrong order. And then plus like buying whatever comic book I could, which it wasn't for years until I was able to like buy them in series from month to month and actually get the storylines, but like buying back issues that just made no sense whatsoever. Just like me piecing everything together by itself.
It's so much nostalgia for that. Like that feeling of just having a random issue or a random episode and trying to figure it out. Like, that's the kind of shit that Miyazaki talks about when he talks about inventing Dark Souls based on understanding fighting fantasy novels.
Yes, absolutely.
Or sorcery stuff. Yeah.
I the only time I get that nowadays is finding like a new band or something that has like 40 years worth of history. Like I just recently, like a hip hop guy was like, I can't believe nobody listens to Blonde Redhead anymore. I used to really love Blonde Redhead, and I was like, what the fuck is Blonde Redhead? And apparently it's just this alternative band that's got
band fucking that's been around forever.
15 records or something, and I'm listening to it from the one from the 90s and like losing my mind about it. It feels so good.
Same thing that happens to me all the time. Like, there's Helium? Shit, that's a band.
Because I need to listen to it. That's credits. A weird episode because of the division like we talked about, but both, I think, are quality. Life Death Part 2, we're going to skip an episode. So we're going to go to do something completely different, and then we're going to come back for Life Death Part 2.
Yeah. It's devastating.
It's a very weird story. I'm looking forward to seeing it for the second or third time. I think I watched this again, with Autumn, but, it's very strange for sure.
Yes. So. Same. Like I'm looking forward to revisiting it. I think that both of these stories are so many cool things happen. I don't think they 100% work. Like when I think about the stuff in this series, that's absolutely A+. You know, my critic brain pops out. And I'm like, this isn't A+. Like, this is still good. I like this, but it's like, I mean, we just had the episode where Mr. Sinister like summon all the Nightmare Realm shit.
Yeah.
You know, like it is hard to fuck with this series at its best. Like if something has to be some of the weakest stuff in the series, this is it for me, but it doesn't mean it's bad. No. It's just like, you know, it suffers a little bit by comparison, but it's also incredible.
Feels extremely basic compared to some of the stuff we've seen. And then like the next episode, right? Like the next episode specifically, is going to like kind of blow everybody away, or did blow everybody away when it came out. And it's difficult to stand up to that. So it's interesting that they like split this into two parts and then put that episode in the middle. Like it's a really weird choice.
Super weird choice. I think that we're right though, that it was just so they could have a cliffhanger because they've been doing that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was released weekly, you know, as a reminder, this wasn't binge release. So like there was a reason to keep people coming back like that.
Any Marvel stuff before we get out of here? Any new Marvel stuff that you're excited about that you've seen?
I watched the trailer for Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man. That
animation looks kind of weird, right? Like I can't tell if I like it or not yet. It's so strange.
I like the still images a lot. Like it in motion, I'm a little bit unsure of, but the actual, like, let's make it actually look like an old comic book, I'm pretty into.
Yeah.
And everyone's gonna, all the shitheads are gonna lose their mind about Norman Osborn being black.
Can't wait.
Which I can't wait for that. Those idiots, like, it's the whiteness is so integral to the Green Goblin's character. Like what are you talking about?
What are you talking about?
Why does that matter?
Yeah.
Vaguely, I think it looks good. Mm-hmm. You know, you're excited about, I saw a fan theory that the thing that's going to like bring Fantastic Four in and X-Men and everything into the MCU is going to be Steve Rogers changing history, like fucking up the time stream, going back in time.
Oh, I dig that. I want to make Captain America sad. That's a thing that I like.
Yeah, and there should be consequences to him having a happy ending. Like, it's not, you know, he gets everything he wants isn't very dramatic.
I don't believe in God, but God, if you're up there, if you could just fuck Steve Rogers in particular for me, that would be great. Yeah. Fuck this one dude particularly for me. There should be consequences for him at kissing Peggy.
There should be consequences for it. you don't fuck with the space-time, you know?
I'm super excited to see what new movie stuff is coming out and see how they're gonna do all that stuff. I feel like the next few movies are gonna be kind of like almost treadmill-esque and build up for the next, like the big stuff.
Fantastic Four is gonna be the thing. Like we have to tank Brave New World, which might be good. You know, the people behind it are fine. I don't care about Red Hulk and everything, but I do like Sam. So I'll see it. I'm curious enough.
I think I told you to skip the first What If episode, right? Because it's got all of the things that you hate. So
it is about kaiju versus mecha.
Yeah,
it's a kaiju mecha episode.
Absolutely, yeah. It's not anything that Gary likes at all. I was watching this and going, wow, they just made this specifically to fuck with Gary.
They love to do that. The first issue of the Jerry Duggan X-Men is also them formulating mech.
Oh god,
back in like 2021 or whatever.
People love mechs. I love mechs. They do. I like a mech. Yeah. I'm a mech guy.
Like a battle suit.
I watched that Armored Core thing with Keanu Reeves on Amazon. Yeah. It was fucking horrible.
Yes. They can't all be winners.
I watched an author we like wrote the Spelunky episode of that. I don't know if you've heard. You've probably seen the Locked Tomb series in your general sphere. But it's a very excellent book series. It's one that I'm like kind of just absolutely fascinated and obsessed with. And Tamsin Muir is the author, and she wrote that Spelunky episode, so I was like, I'm gonna watch this Spelunky episode, and I was like, I don't care what you're watching, I'm playing solitaire on my phone. I said, but it has Tamsin Muir, like Tamsin Muir wrote it. She's like, oh, okay, let's see what it's about. And it's exactly what you think about a Spelunky episode. It's just about somebody like going into the level and dying over and over again, which is like remarkably like what Tamsin Muir writes in her other books. But it was just that and like 10 minutes of that, basically, maybe not even that long. And it finishes, and Autumn just looked at me, she goes, have you ever played that game? What is this? I don't understand anything that just happened on the screen. Yeah.
Everything from Secret Level looks like that.
It's so weird. I only watched those two, and they're both fucking horrible. I didn't like either one of them. So.
It looks really bad. I haven't watched it because I'll probably watch it for Adaptation Decay at some point.
Sure. Yeah. That makes sense.
I watched some of it. So, like, it's a. But I remember I read Will's review of it and everything. And
he was scathing. Scathing.
Yeah. It confirmed what it looked like to me.
Yeah. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We appreciate it. Thank you for bearing with us as we took some long breaks for health and for personal reasons. We really appreciate it. We should be back on schedule as you're listening to this going week to week. Not exactly sure when this is coming out, but by the time it releases, we'll probably be finished with the entire series, if I had to guess.
Yes. We're going to keep banking episodes because we are learning our lesson.
Yes.
In terms of delays and everything.
But if you want to support the show, you can go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv and donate some bucks and get all just a fucking fire hose worth of content sprayed in your face. Lots of exclusive podcasts on there that you should go and check out for my friends, Gary and Cole. It's very fun stuff.
Yeah. And check out, Rude Eats and Non-Human Biologics.
Yeah.
And Still My Sword Doth Rest Upon Thy Nightly Brown.
Y'all roasted me for my podcast name so hard on Duckstream. And what's funny is y'all named all of them almost all correctly. So our Game of Thrones podcast is My Sword Is Hungry Still. And I think I've told you like why that turned out so bad for me in the past. But we'll talk about that later. But y'all didn't know about the Lord of the Rings one. Which is Seek for the Sword That Is Broken, which is
fuck off. I gotta tell Will about that.
But it's Patreon only, so it's not like a public podcast, but we definitely called it Seek for the Sword That Was Broken, which is apparently some fucking poetry that came out of the Lord of the Rings stories. So
excellent.
Yeah. Thank you everybody for listening. We appreciate it. We'll be back next week with more X-Men.
Take care, everybody.